really, what this is almost a continuation of some things that happened last year when the issue of getting the grace emphasis and the gospel around the world came up. And as a result of that, I know we wanted to have some more discussion about that. How can we do that? We're not here to say, to discuss, do we need to get the gospel out? We know that. We're here to say, do we need to get the right gospel out? There's a lot of groups and individuals who are getting the gospel out, but we want to get the right gospel out. And how can we do that, and what is the need? And that's kind of what we want, and I really am here to listen to you, and we can listen to each other about what are the needs that we see, and what is being done about it, and what could be done better, and how can we get the grace message out even better. We've had some discussion in various formats with this, but we want to hear what you have to say. Now, I listened to Barney today, as you did, and he says, as I have also experienced, you go into many of these countries like his own, and people are like children, was his analogy, which was excellent illustration, and they take the first thing that's given to them. And we don't fault them for that. Many countries will take whatever material they can get, and so it's a matter of who gets there first. And my friend, the pastor at Underwood in California, used to be in the tank corps, and he had this saying that whoever fires the first shot in tank warfare, whoever fires the first shot wins the battle, throws the other side into confusion, and you got the great advantage, and you win the battle. And I've used that analogy and illustration everywhere I go. But see, grace theology has not fired the first shot in many places. So we have groups going to countries like Barney's, Zimbabwe, people going to Russia and teaching, and people are getting off on the totally wrong foot with legalism or works gospel and things like that. And now we've got two battles to fight. We've got to get there, and then we've got to undo what's been done, and then start with the grace gospel. So maybe we want to talk about how do we get there first, or do you know what can we do? We have no formal networks. We have some missions agencies that are strongly grace-oriented, like New Tribes, I thought was strongly grace-oriented. I've heard a little different data here today. East-West Ministries is, and B International, which is why Jody was supposed to be here today, just to give some insight and all the work he's doing.
What was the one you mentioned right before?
New Tribes, East-West, it may not be so well-known. They don't want to be well-known because they're still working behind. They're working in Cuba and China and things like that. But I happen to know a lot of the folks that are very good folks committed to grace theology. But we're just interested, and I'm just here to facilitate and to guide a discussion about what needs do you see, your insights into getting the grace gospel out of the seminary and out of theological discussion and into the lives of people around the world. Yeah, and your name is?
My name is Ron.
Ron?
We're with a ministry in Las Vegas that just recently started called City of Refuge, but with a focus kind of on a very small scale, at least not in any way possible, so this is something that we need to hear. Would it be even possible or plausible to consider having a representative from, let's say, an entity such as the Grace Evangelical Society, one or two people, with the desire of kind of like a roving patrol to move throughout the various missions throughout the world, making contacts with existing ministries that may not be so strong in their particular position, of which you may be able to present to them the grace message instead of trying to reinvent the wheel and sending additional resources out? Is there any possibility of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point, because we don't want, there are the organizations, there are the structures, there is the penetration by all these groups, and is there a need for another group to start all of that over again, or can we in some way influence those who are out there? That's a good question, and I don't know that I have an answer for it, but yeah, follow up then.
One of the things when my wife and I were overseas in Indonesia as missionaries, one of the things that we came to realize, and it's still a passion of ours, when our children are grown, perhaps we'll realize it, is that the missionaries there are hungry, and they will come together very willingly if there is someone who is willing to come over and put on a spiritual retreat for them, a and they will come together, and they're the leaders, and they will usually bring some of their nationals with them for these types of conferences. And again, whether that's something, you know, Grace can be involved with, that's going to depend on the people that are involved with Grace. It really comes down to each of us saying, hey, you know, that's a burden God is putting on my heart. Let me see if I can organize it and follow Dr. Rademacher and say, hey, are you willing to go with me or whatever? But I think that's one of the key strategies in a lot of these countries. They're existing. Some of these people are doing a fantastic job with taking and teaching God's word, but they don't even understand God's grace, so how can they teach it? And if we can help train them or retrain them, if you will. And a lot of them are open to that. Very willing.
Okay. And, of course, you know Jody Dillo, and I asked him to co-host this because here's a man who has infinitely more experience than me. He's been doing this all his life, getting the grace emphasis out, but not without emphasizing it, probably. But, you know, but just
you've got to watch that.
Yeah. Yeah. he's woven it into all of his materials, and that's why I like to use his materials in training others. And he has a lot of insight into how we might be able to strategize this. But Jody barely knows why we're here either, because like I said, this is all last minute. So we're just talking about the strategies and the need to get the grace emphasis out. And Tom wants to say something.
Charlie, I just noticed this by coming to GES, but a couple of years ago we had a missionary that we support from Honduras, husband and wife. They're very grace-oriented. And then this year we have Lauren Paul, as a missionary we support the Dominican Republic. Very grace-oriented. But what's neat about it, they teach church leaders in their country. So they go back there and get excited and come into our conference, go back and teach the church leaders grace principle.
Great.
So that's a great thing.
It's great, great to bring folks like that here.
Missionaries.
Get some more leaders.
Get them excited. And go.
Well, that's one. That's a good strategy then, bring people here.
Let me hit a few fronts then, because number one, when you're with a mission agency that doesn't define itself, and you have a mixed bag of missionaries, how do you address the issue? Because you've got, you know, the nationals looking at each missionary as if they're saying the same thing, when in fact they're not saying the same thing. And so you have, you know, you're trying to produce and present something and train them, and they're hearing mixed voices. It makes it very hard. So that's one thing, working with the missionaries themselves. The second thing is the nationals have been bombarded by all kinds of stuff. As you said, the grace has been the last to get stuff in their hands. They have got all kinds of stuff from the Reform. They have done real well in translating in other languages, and they've got buckaroos behind it or something, because they have gotten the stuff into their hands almost on a free basis. So, you know, that's another whole issue. You've got it very well deep-seated in the nationals before you even approach it. And then third, there's not the resources in those languages that you're working with to use with them to have something that continues to reinforce. It's like I talked to some of the pastors in Dominican, and they say, look, we've never come to Reformed theology as a position by studying theology. It comes from studying the Bible. I said, really? So, do you use commentaries? Yeah, of course. So, what commentaries do you use? Hendricks? And all down the line. And I said, well, do you know what their position is theologically? No. Well, you've got the position without studying the theology. And it's a matter of hermeneutics, you know, exegesis, the whole bit, but it's a whole package that you're dealing with. Can you address some of those issues?
Boy. How about that first one? Any insight into dealing with a missions organization that really doesn't have a centralized view of the gospel? Jody, I don't know if you've run across this. And so the people are out teaching different things, and what do we do about something in a situation like that?
Well, our organization, BEE World, Biblical Education by Extension World, we have many missionaries with us. I don't know what the percentage is. It would not hold to a free grace position. Now, I wish it were different, but that's just the reality, and that's going to be true in all of these missions. And it's extremely difficult to directly hit that kind of stuff. So it has to be more indirect, and of course, one way I think you've already mentioned is bringing all these missionaries have, you know, conferences, like we're having one in Ireland, International Staff Conference, and we're having Dr. David Goody come and speak. But it'd be great to have, you know, grace-oriented speakers that can handle this stuff, not confrontationally, but just sort of indirectly, and as you give the messages, and a lot of missionaries will pick up on it. The second thing that I think is really needed, and maybe this has already been addressed, but is lower level grace-oriented materials. For example, we need a very simple introductory discipleship course. I've been looking at some stuff that Ed Underwood has developed, and in fact, I even started working on converting that into a format that we use for the internet, CD, and our published papers. But he handles it in a way that it's not confrontational or in your face, but all the truth is right there. So, one of the things that could really happen out of a group like this is that a number of you may want to write those kind of materials or courses that various mission groups could use. I know we certainly could. And then it gets distributed. If we had something like that, we could put it in the hands of 5,000 Chinese tomorrow. And they'd love it. And they wouldn't even know that it's different than what they got. They'd just be learning about grace. They'd find it out indirectly, but it would be in a positive way.
So by lower level, you don't mean the heavy theological arguments. Right. You mean the basic discipleship thing.
Just basic discipleship stuff. Or maybe a little click up. Like we're sort of in between level, 12th. We call it 12 years reading ability. Most people end up being leaders lots of times.
Don't you really need the both ends of the spectrum?
Yeah, you do. I was going to say that in Hong Kong, one of the things I noticed when I was living there is that Westminster Seminary has had an enormous impact there. And a lot of the faculty members of a lot of those schools there are Westminster grads. So there's a very strong reform, Amil emphasis in a lot of those schools, and they're taking that in country big time. And of course, this means that to hit it at the other end, we either have to get some faculty members on some of these mission schools. Probably you'd have more like at something like the International Schools of Theology on Campus Crusade. They don't have these definite hardcore doctrinal commitments, but so that you can be influencing people at that other end of the spectrum as well. Or start a school. You know, that's what the Westminster guys do. They just start a school in Hong Kong. You know?
Actually, I've been waiting, wondering when you're going to translate your book into Spanish for us, is what I've been wondering.
Well, haven't no current plans, but if you'd like to do it, I'll.
I don't think Jody would do it. He'd probably get somebody to do it.
The question about when you say simple and entry level, are you saying that in terms of language used, the reading level, or contrasted, say, with Hebrews 5, when it says, I want to tell you about the truth.
Yeah, it's more the reading level.
You're talking about kingdom, truth.
Yeah, but more at a lower reading level. In other words, 95% of the target out there is at a 5th to 9th grade level. And our particular target is the 12th grade, which is probably about 5% of the target. But we need some stuff that could go to that level and even lower.
And so it's not difficult. Theological content, but
no.
Actual accessibility.
Yeah. But how complex you make it. I mean, you know, you don't want to give the reign of the servant kings to the groups we work with. They just, you know, throw up their hands and couldn't read it.
Yeah. Are you coming out with, now obviously the reign of the servant kings is basically critical theology as you work through it. That's one of the things I see from a leadership level, whether you can do it on ministry leading to that, but so much of what they've learned is systematic, and they've only learned the proof text without really seeing the context as a whole. And so you tend to go against the grain as you try to get them in
think the thing that we hear, whether it's Nepal, the Middle East, Burma, Korea, China, give us more book studies. And most of our courses are theological, like, you know, Christian Home, or How to Study the Bible, or Survey of Doctrine, this kind of stuff. But one of the things we're always hearing is more book studies. Now, if you develop this stuff just in the flow of the study of a book, you know, the medicine goes down more easily and less confrontationally. So, like, we need a course right now on Hebrews. We've scheduled someone to develop that. We have one on Romans and Galatians. And the former one that we had wasn't as clear on the grace stuff. We're revising it now, and I'm making sure that it is. And but we need one on Hebrews because, you know, that gives you an opportunity, particularly with that book, to get into some of these issues. But I think, you know, the big need is just grace-oriented courses and materials that can get out there and be distributed. And here's 500 people here. There ought to be a resource to, and we'll help you deliver it, you know. You write it, we'll use it.
I'm familiar with the ministry, one of the larger missions organizations. They had a book project for pastors, and I think their goal was to raise 75,000 packets of books to deliver to pastors in West Africa, and which they did, I believe. But when I looked at the collection of books, it was pretty much whatever somebody would give them. You know, Matthew Henry's commentary was there, and just anything that didn't have royalties attached to it. It was just a whole conglomeration of stuff, and I said, what a shame that even as a free gift, this stuff is just going to influence these people sometime in unhealthy directions. You know, why can't we do a book project like that? Was what I was thinking.
There's something like Firstborn Sons, or If They Should Fall Away. You know, those books are too complex. Are they not what you want for humans? Are you familiar with those?
Yeah, I've read them. I wouldn't use them, not because I disagree. I think I agree with the stuff, but it's too specific on an issue. I think it sort of needs to be a little more subtle and kind of in the flow of a broader course. Yeah, well, that's what I said. Something like Hebrews or something. You could sort of naturally flow into this.
When I went to Ghana and taught the book of Hebrews, I just exposited the book. I didn't exposit a theological bent to it or anything. I just developed the argument, and they all said, they never really questioned it from our grace perspective. And you just teach it as an argument of the book. Let the authority be in the book. That's what we should all be doing anyway.
Before we get off on something else, if you were to pick countries where you could get in with the message first, like you started out today saying, you know, we could get there first, what countries are those?
My experience is very limited, so Jody's going to talk about it. There's
in
so
countries
many countries
where you can get there before the other stuff does.
Right. In Bahrain.
I don't think you can. I'd be very surprised. Any place where there's an organized church, they've already got a lot of the Reformed commentaries, theologies, even if it's at a lower level.
How about Red China?
In China, it's a real mixed bag. I mean, you've got networks that are downstream from Hudson Taylor that would have a pretty good grace perspective, kind of Watchman Nee and that kind of group. But the vast majority of them would view eternal security, for example, as a strange cult. That's American theology. In fact, you'll hear that all over Eastern Europe as well. Eternal security, well, that's American theology. We don't need that here, so please don't bring that up. You know, we'll get that kind of stuff. So we don't. But what we do is talk about grace. And the logic of that begins to dawn on them after, you know, 6-8 months of being with us. And you don't even have to talk about eternal security. They see where this is going. So it's a very indirect approach.
Now that you bring that up, are there particular concepts, constructs, buzzwords to avoid, meaning to communicate the truth another way?
Well, I wouldn't use eternal security. That's in your face.
What else?
It's one good thing about the word grace is it's pretty. It's a nice word. Everybody loves it. Loves the concept of grace. They don't follow it consistently.
Don't use the term eternal security. What else?
Heresy.
Don't call them heretics.
Yeah. I don't know.
You just talk about grace, and everybody likes the idea of grace, and they all think they believe the same thing about it.
Yeah, I can't think of any real hot buttons except that, but it's just the positive exposition of grace, I think.
Well, a couple of things. One about words. Some of the words, because it brings up a couple of points. One is words that people don't like to hear, plus the level of education. Words like propitiation mean nothing right. to people. Words like justification don't mean a lot to those kinds of people. And except sometimes I've seen that it gives the impression that we're simply a bunch of puffed up people with a great deal of knowledge. And we can substitute much better words, just speaking in terms of salvation. Or being made right before God, it makes a lot of sense. But there are a lot of countries that the first cannon hasn't been fired. You take the country of Libya, for example. There has not been an organized missionary in Libya since 1960. So if you take Morocco, Tunisia, Libya, Algeria, all of North Africa, right over to Egypt, while they're all closed countries, surrounding the southern borders of all those countries, countries like Chad, there are opportunities and there are mission work going on there. So if something can be focused to work on the borders of those countries, where we can work with the people that cross back and forth in those nations, and as we work on those borders, we give to them to the grace message, they will be the first gunfire from those tanks that go back into their country.
Go ahead. There's a man in the back that's been raising his hand.
Is anybody familiar with the situation in Iraq? Say if that country is militarily dismantled altogether, what sort of indigenous Christian community is there? What's the
That probably people know we're working in the Middle East now, and we're working with Iraqis in Jordan. So I'm no expert on it, but what they tell me, these Iraqis in Jordan, they tell me that Saddam Hussein, a lot of his bodyguards are Christians because they're the only people he can trust. He does not have a hostility toward Christianity at all. He's a secular leader, even though you see him bowing on, you know, TV all the time to Allah. And that there's a thriving Christian church in Baghdad. It's open, people attend it, there's no persecution at all. So there's not at least in Iraq, there's not a specific target against the Christians. They probably have some restrictions that I don't know about.
No pun intended on the target.
So Iraq, you know, there's 200,000 Iraqi refugees in Jordan, and we have about 30 Arab facilitators now working with over 200 of them. They have them in groups. And a lot of those people, you know, they'll go back to Iraq once this thing's over. So
what's happened, you know, they've been embedded in these countries.
When you say we, Joe,
they want
to B-E-E. Okay. Yeah.
Is there a particular theological leaning that the indigenous church has?
I really don't know. But one thing that I would like to throw in just terms of getting the bullets in there is doing it over the internet or on CD-ROM because it penetrates where we can't go. And that's what we're doing. We're up in Arabic right now, for example. I'll be showing some of this tomorrow. But you can, like we have these 30 facilitators in Jordan. They are just excited about going back to their home country with material on CD-ROM, paper if their environment allows it, and the web. They got three different types of bullets they can use. And they're going back and they're going to be teaching this stuff.
To the Iraqis?
No, these are from Libya, Syria, Iran, Gaza Strip, Egypt, and there's two other countries. But they want to go back this summer and actually start launching BE training, right, in these countries.
And you're going to share that vision about the internet seminar tomorrow?
Talk about that tomorrow.
2:45?
Right.
Whatever. Just as an advertisement.
That is a vehicle, definitely, the web, the internet.
Very strategic.
And by the way, though, there is, just to say one thing about the Arab world, there's an awful lot going on that people don't know about. In other words, the underground church in the Arab world is not virgin, untouched soil that hasn't heard anything. There's evangelistic organizations that have been working underground with thousands of underground church leaders for 10 or 15 years. And they don't talk about it, but they've been there, and I'm sure that, you know, they're passing on the usual, you know, follow-up materials.
Let's let Barney get a word in.
Yeah.
And maybe as we look at what can we do, I would really like to find out what has been happening. The free grace message did not start now. It started some time back, maybe even before I was born, because I'm just about 33 years old. Now, what has been the problem with the existing free grace, you know, ministers? Is it that they've not done much in as far as proclaiming the message of grace is concerned, or they've not been vigorous enough?
You mean here in the States?
No, I think everywhere.
Okay.
Because we have the free grace preachers, I think all of them. We have them in Africa, we have them here. Could it be that we need, first of all, to address what is the problem with the existing? Those who've been there, what have they done in that which has not been able to bring about impact in their nations in as far as the message of free grace is concerned? If we discover what has been their failure, then it will be very easy for us to move forward and look at new strategies of how we can be able to, you know, begin to launch out into new places, or maybe help resurface the same people who've been there but they've not done much. And so I was thinking maybe it would be good for us to look at what has been the problem, the very existing. What is it that they've not been able to do, that which has made the free grace message to decline or not to, you know, go further? That's what I was looking at. And suggesting on the aspect of launching out, I would love that we probably look at two messages that have become critical to the message of grace. That is one, salvation. If you went to Africa, Zambia in particular, every person will tell you that I'm saved by grace, and you quote Ephesians 2 verse 8 and 9, you quote Titus 3, 5, you quote all the scriptures that talks about, you know, being saved, you know, through the grace of our Lord. But in actual sense, it's not grace in practice that they have. It's just grace in theology. Now, you find that even as you go, you find it very difficult. You may begin to agree with people. You may find people who tell you, I believe in Ephesians 2, 8 and 9, the grace of God, I'm saved through grace, you know. But in actual sense, it's not really in practice. But they will talk about it verbally like that. When you look at the aspect of salvation, there is also the other aspect, which is the second one. It's very critical. Blessings and the message of grace. It's like people have to have certain qualifications now in order to get the blessings of God, you know, according to the messages that are being proclaimed everywhere. Now, those are the critical issues we need to address. The salvation aspect and blessings and grace, because that's what has brought about a lot of confusion. People are not able to understand, you know, is it that I should qualify by doing A, B, C, D in order to get the blessings of God, or, you know, God by His grace would do this and that for me, or is it by doing A, B, C, D besides being in the grace of God that I would qualify to be saved? So these are just some of the things I was looking at. I hope you have been able to catch up with my idea.
Well, I can only comment from my experience, and there's a lot of countries that I have no understanding of, but in regard to your first point, how the grace teachers failed, from my experience in the limited number of countries, there's about probably 8 or 9, well, actually, there's probably about 15 that I have personal experience of. It's not that they failed, it hasn't even been tried. mean, it's not like you have this army of grace teachers going out there communicating the message. The bottom line is there's very little going out that I'm aware of, at least in my realm of experience. Now, in regard to your, so I think it's a, you know, like there's a lot that could be done. Just sending out missionaries, you know, whether it's a campus crusade guy that your church decides to support, but you know this guy is really committed, that's going to have an impact. It's going to have an impact on the other missionaries. It's going to have an impact on the people that he influences, or whether it's a Wycliffe guy or a, you know, a navigator, operation mobilization. Look at the people you're sending out there. That's one way. But the regard to your second question, you have to kind of realize, and you probably know better than I do, living in Zambia, but let's just multiply the problem. In a place like China, where you've got a group, for example, called the Criers, and it's their belief that in order to become a Christian, you have to repent and cry for 7 days straight. Now, this started with one man back in 78. They now have over 2 million, and they're all new Christians. Now, can you imagine how many they'd have if you didn't have to go through this hoop of crying? And they have a panel of judges that determines whether your tears were sincere or not. And if they can conclude at the end of the, you know, the 5 or 6 days that it wasn't, you got to do it again. So, I mean, this is what you're up against.
Not this make me cry.
Then there's another group called the Shouters. I mean, they have all these kind of strange doctrines, and there's millions and millions and millions of people. And in a Oriental hierarchical mode of thinking, it's a very pyramid structure, and these people at the top rule the roost. And you don't come in challenging some guy down under, or you'll be out right away. You know, these Americans are bringing in American theology, and that's the end of you, see. So it has to be very low-key and indirect, just positive, positive, positive all the time, presenting grace. And not so much, well, you know, you've heard in your church that, you know, Hebrews 6 teaches that you can lose your salvation, but I'm here to tell you that's not true. And, you know, you do that, man, it's going to percolate up to the top, and you're out of the country. But if you just come in and kind of naively present a positive view of Hebrews 6 or whatever the issue is, sure, you'll get all this stuff coming back, but it won't be like you were being divisive or whatnot. And you have to sort of say, you know, there's different ways of looking at this, and some people hold this, and some people hold this, and, you know, I've come to this conclusion for these reasons, you know, all this mealy mouth. But if you don't do it that way, you'll be in a lot of trouble. The Shouters believe that the louder you scream, the more likely it is that God will hear you. It's really an interesting deal. And you go past these Shouter underground house churches, and they're screaming at the top of their lungs. And, of course, it can create a security problem because everybody in the village knows exactly what's going on. But, again, there's a couple of million of them.
It really does. We laugh, but we cry, don't we? Let me give my perspective on this. I think, first of all, we're always fighting against the current because there's a natural aversion, I call it a natural aversion to grace. So I think anybody who teaches grace is always fighting against a natural aversion to it. Human nature is that they want to add work. So we're always fighting against that, and that might explain the decline or neglect of the grace message. The other thing is, it's not really been systematized by many people, and those resources that have systematized it have not been really widespread. And so many of the pastors and workers in other countries, they get their hands, they use whatever they can get their hands on, and they're just not getting their hands on a lot of consistently grace-oriented material. That's why a book like Jody's is so important, because he's done a lot of work in systematizing that grace message. And helping them see that there's a system. Then when they have a system, they have something they can plug other things into.
And a place they can answer all the yeah buts. You know, they might buy what you're saying on one verse. Well, that makes sense. But what about this? What about this? What about this? And that's why you needed, well, I felt I needed to write something that addressed all the verses. So the guy could go to the, you know, the index in the back and say, okay, well, there's a plausible, you know,
we're glad that you're recovering obsessive, but we're glad that you were. we're glad that you went through that spell of your life.
Maybe that's from there. When you say something like that, one thing that has been raised like that, you have people that are producing books and booklets concerning the message of free grace. You send them over with trust. And believing that our brothers out there will go read these books and put into practice what they read, and probably begin to spread it over to other people out there. And yet, with all the trust that you have in them, when you send them the books, they don't utilize them to that purpose. What happens is that maybe they just pack them because, you know, may not just be so much on Africa, but almost around the world today, people are not reading books as such.
Did you say maybe they spark them, burn them? Is that what you said?
No, not that they burn them. They put them on the shelves.
Oh, okay.
And what happens
is that right.
Because you read, you think somebody sending the book to you
wants right.
to read it, yet you just spark it. Now, here is a situation where what is happening today is that people listen so much to what is being spoken on television than to read for themselves and peruse you know, the scriptures. So people are so focused on what is being said on television. And with the exciting kind of messages that are coming to bear on us, when you give them a book concerning grace, they will not bother to read it. They'll just say, no, I've heard about grace. But they don't know that there is also the other aspect. Like you said, they've taken it so natural because it's like, you know, it has been with them. But in actual sense, it has to be put into practice. Now, from that point, I would like to suggest that as Grace Evangelical Society, if we have to have this message of free grace passed on to people and really see it begin to have impact and you know, properly spread and saturate the lives of the Christians out there, we need to come up with a strategy. And that one, like he said, we can come up with places where we know, say for instance, Nigeria. If there could be five pastors who would be really, you know, desiring to learn the message of free grace, not the way they knew it a long time ago, not the way they understand it, but that we go afresh and present it to them and explain from the salvation aspect through to every aspect that concerns the grace of God. And thereafter, begin to, you know, help them launch out with the message of grace. And probably every 3 months, we have kind of a report given and the refresher courses carried out in their, you know, countries every 3 months or every 6 months to ensure that these people are not diverting from the message of grace to something else. Because what has been happening is that there are so many doctrines today, I'll give you an example of that, where some people are talking about healing in Africa, where, I mean, I'm talking about a place where I've been and I've been conversant with what goes on. Somebody comes on a crusade and he says, there's a person who has got abdominal pains around, and this person turns up, and then he says, the Lord has told me to hit you right on the stomach where it pains, then you'll be healed. And immediately that guy does that, that guy goes away, says, I'm healed. The next day, that becomes a doctrine. The preacher would be there and he would say, anybody sick? Anybody having abdominal pains? And that person takes out and say, yes, I'll hit you. And this is how you're going to get healed. And so in Africa, the way I've seen is that we're so easy to mislead. Anyone who can, you know, I'm not saying every one of us, but that most people are so easy to mislead in as far as doctrine is concerned. Somebody says, okay, I'll pray for you. When you fall down, then the Holy Spirit touched you. And that becomes a doctrine. Everyone will pray. And if you don't fall down, then the Holy Spirit hasn't touched you. So you find that in such places, you need to have a program, strategical program, where you go there, you know, teach a number of church leaders, give them a work plan of how they can launch out, come back 6 months later, go to them, what are the fruits, what are the results of the programs that you've been carrying out. And like that, I see it working out in a much effective way than if we were just to send books out there. Because people would receive books, and some of them, I'll tell you, I've gone to houses of friend pastors who've packed books concerning just one particular subject they've been in the library, more than 100 of them. He's never distributed the books, but they just packed in there. And what he waits for, you wouldn't know. So I that's just my idea.
Very good, very good.
Barney's raised a very crucial point. By the way, I concur with that. I've seen the most massive libraries on pastor shelves in Eastern Europe and Russia that have never been read. You can tell the books never even been opened. It's the long-term relationship. It's not a matter of just going in and having a conference and maybe winning a lot of people. Hey, yeah, that makes sense. That's cool. But then, you know, okay, well, how do you implement this? And they drift away from it. That's exactly the kind of strategy that's needed, and it's the one that we frankly implement. We're with these guys about 5 years, and we're coming back 4 times a year, and we're with them 3 weeks each time. And we're leading them through 21 courses, see? So over a period of, you know, a year or so, you're checking on them. You've got, you know, all these people, and you know exactly, well, not exactly, but you get a pretty good handle on what's really going on, because it's all interactive discussion. We're not lecturing at them. They're talking. Now, we're getting it through translation, but because it's talk coming back, we're hearing what they're believing. And, you know, whether we're making any progress. I guess what I'm saying here is that whatever we might as a society organize ourselves around, whether we want to start launching a series of seminars or whatever, there needs to be this consistency of follow-up. So it's not just go have a conference and leave. Because Barney's absolutely right. Nothing will happen except excitement at the conference, and it'll be dead.
Very, very good.
Yeah,
yeah.
One thing I found is that, especially as a missionary, you've got people coming in all the time in short term.
Yeah.
the thing is, there's a confidence level that has to be established.
Right.
And your long-term missionary, your career missionary, is a bridge for that short term. If he's got the confidence of people, but if you don't, they're going to be real nice to North America and see what there is that they're going to give them.
Right.
But they're not going to really take the message and really run with it, you know, and believe it. Because it's a long-term relationship of seeing people change their thinking. It doesn't happen that way.
Yeah.
But to aid us, you guys do a lot of networking together with the organizations that you work with. Is there any way that we can get a directory or a listing of the things that you see as grace-oriented, from schools to mission agencies to books to, you know what I mean? Is it possible to network
kind of
some of that
kind
stuff?
Of tricky to do that.
I don't know any mission agencies that I would categorize as grace-oriented as an official policy of the mission. Now, there are some schools, and there are a lot of missionaries within these mission agencies individually that would hold, you know, these views. But in terms of a mission agency, I don't know one. Maybe someone in here does.
No, maybe some of the smaller ones that are
being with missions that don't do that and infiltrate in and work with the missionaries.
Yeah, that's what I'm suggesting. Just support the kind of missionaries that want to join that organization that happen to believe that stuff. Make that a criteria of who you're going to give support to as a church.
I had a fellow call me not long ago, and he had listened to my message about getting the grace message around the world. He said, I really feel burdened to do something. I have some money. Which mission agency should I send it to? Mm-hmm. And I couldn't really answer him. I just had to name some people.
Yeah, normally it's individuals.
Yeah. Individuals. Yeah. But is our question, I guess, is that a good strategy or
is there
what kind of network is there? What's that?
Is there a mission needed that would be very sorry?
Well, that's a question, too, on the table, I guess. But, yeah, let's bomb it in.
That's an interesting proposal.
New Tribes has a very strong reputation for grace.
Do they?
Very.
Okay.
Who's that? New Tribes mission?
They have a strong reputation.
Very strong.
Yeah. We'll get back to maybe that later.
Seems to me that you described five levels here. Seminaries, primarily U.S. seminaries, I'm thinking. Mission agencies, missionaries or evangelists. People that are traveling overseas, national pastors, and then the USTV worldwide impact, and which is a major player on the whole thing. And it seems to me that over my lifetime, short as it is, this message has lost in the seminary level. In America, we've not, you know, Dallas has gone from grace to a mixed bag.
Western
and we, the headwaters of the river
are going to start out at seminaries, and they're going to go from there to the mission agencies who send the missionaries, and they're going to impact the national pastors who are going to impact this. Now, kind of flying over above all of that are the false teachers of the U.S. Airways that have worldwide things, and I don't think any, I don't know, other, I don't watch those guys, so I don't know if there's a grace guy in among them all. I think they're all a bunch of heretics.
They're all standing.
Okay. And he needs grace. It would seem to me that if you want to capture the water downstream, you've got to capture it. You've got to capture the U.S. Because at this point, the U.S. still drives world missions. The money and the people and the initiative is still coming from the U.S. And so it's going to be hard to go in and capture, for example, the Southern Baptist International Mission Board. It's hard to go in and capture that on the top level and then have them start implementing something down when you can't, when the people coming out of their seminaries that are staffing their agency, their IBM, when they're coming out and they've got, and they're mixed bags except for a few kids that get impacted by somebody like me, except for that, you're never going to turn the National Mission Board around. And the same with the other ones. So it seems to me, why are we losing on the seminary level? And you know better than I would, but it seems to me that over, if you go into a seminary library, the great thinkers of church history that are good readers, or people like Shedd or stuff like that, that you read them because, oh, this part, this is really exciting the way he said these things, and then he's got, but the grace writers, they haven't done anything. They haven't put anything out there that turned anybody's crank, hardly. Jody's book, you know.
I think you're right, and I remember talking to Zing about this. The way I think we should go is to get published articles in JETS, Trinity Journal, JBL, BIPSAC, that don't confront this whole thing like it's a grace versus reform thing, but deal with a specific passage. For example, I remember a passage that influenced me was, it was the discussion of the overcomer by some guy, I think it was in JETS, but he was arguing this, oh, it was the Revelation 3:5 stuff. He just did a beautiful job. I don't even know if the guy would elsewhere, agree with us. But that article influenced me tremendously. It was done at a very high level, very careful, scholarly exegesis. I could recognize all the sources. He wasn't, combative. But see, if we had a lot of people writing articles that did get published, not only in the scholarly journals, but the popular journals, that's where you catch a lot of these influencers, and that's where these seminary profs go to find research on certain passages, So, I kept telling Zane, look, why don't you just start cranking out articles for publication in all these different places, because he certainly has the credentials to do it. So does Earl. And, I could, to some extent. I don't know if I can get published or not. It takes a lot of work to do something that is really going to be acceptable. Or, you've got to have all this research and there's a lot of protocols.
All you have to do is read Bob's book on saving faith, the book. Mm-hmm. You've got to ask yourself, are a lot of these people even saved? Mm-hmm. Are they open, receptive to the ministry of the Holy Spirit? The very testimony is trying to be published, or have them absorbed? That's a big problem for me, because how far do you go to along that road of saying this person based on their doctrine is heretical? Here you got IBM's and Peter's. I mean, Paul didn't pull punches. He didn't say, well, I don't dare mention the names. I've got to exercise tolerance here and patience. I mean, he called it what it was. And I don't know if we can do that. How do you restrain yourself from being combative and yet hold fast to the truth? state right now, the biggest mission agency in the world is the Southern Baptist. If you were, not the guy that's the head of the Southern Baptist IBM mission board, he's not the strategic guy. The guy that's most strategic in the Southern Baptist is the young president of the Southern Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. Because he is Southern Baptist, think of him as their prize young intellectual. And he sounds, you know, and he's 5-point Calvinist.
Worship to the man.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's not the guys at other seminaries. If you can find a way for somebody like you to develop a friendship, and you turn that one guy right there around, he could, in time, turn around the whole Southern Baptist Convention just like they have done with recapturing their seminaries. Now, you do that, and you get 5,000 missionaries over time, and then if you think strategically about, you know, other seminaries and people, if there's, well, the way East West does their fundraising, you know, they bring those handful of guys out and have a big, if you could put together on that level, then a very, very select few people that only belong in that level, and you could take them to a Colorado house for 4 days of interaction with that guy and Zane Hodges and a couple guys. Nobody else belongs there. It just got to be the like kind, and you say, all right, listen, and nobody knows about it because they won't go if it's publicized. But you pull those guys together, strategic guys, and you start to work on them at that level, you got a shot at this thing.
Influence the influencers.
Absolutely.
What I'm seeing we're talking about strategy here, and it seems to be multi-level. Start at the top with influencers, meet people's needs for literature, discipleship, pastors, and so forth. Tim, that's a good word, Bob.
I would like to think that Paul did take the free grace message and began with the churches in Galatia, and the other theologies are naturally going to follow, and it's always going to be that way because there is something of human nature. And the mission that I'm part of rewrote their doctrinal statement and rewrote the presentation of the gospel on the website to take out anything that was Lordship Salvation or anything that I thought could be read as Lordship Salvation. But there are still people in the mission that read it and go right on with the Lordship presentation. And like someone said, that you hear Ephesians 2:8-9 from the Catholics, from the Orthodox, from the Methodists, from everybody. If there aren't some anathemas, if there aren't some, here's exactly what we mean, and anybody else that doesn't say that is wrong, then I think anything is going to be taken and just going to be pushed back to Lordship eventually. And we can't be rude all the time, but somebody's got to say, here's exactly what we mean, and we don't mean that.
Yeah, very good. I'm watching the clock, and I'm noticing just a couple minutes.
What's one thing we could do right now? Those of us that are here could get convicted and take one journal that we do have that's all free grace and take $100 and buy 7 prescriptions.
They're called subscriptions.
The prescriptions.
It's one of the things that
they are. We don't get serious about spreading the things we've got.
Yeah.
When Jody went overseas, I knew he wasn't going to be able to sell his book very well over there. I suppose I've sold 10,000 of them.
Keep going.
At least half of them.
You're the man.
Now, why? Because I believe in that. Do we believe in the journal of the Grace Evangelical Society? Why don't we give it away come next Christmas? Give it to, take $100, take $200. How many $100 did we spend coming here and staying here? How about taking an equal amount and get that happy now?
How about if each one of us identified 10 influencers that we know about, and we not only gave them a subscription to that thing, but we sent them a book, said, hey, you know, just...
You bet.
You know, see, just to get, you know,
send
get
them Zane's commentary on First John.
Absolutely, it'd be great.
And yet, on the flip side, I've been preaching free grace for years, and I never knew anything about Grace Evangelical Society until just recently.
Yeah.
And how far away from you am I?
Yeah, not
20 minutes, 45 minutes most. And yet, it's not getting out there because there is, somebody got about networking,
And I think that part of what we're doing here, that will help, but like you said, let's get going where we're at. And if each of us are preaching grace and we're influencing and training up our Timothys as we're supposed to be, and we're training them to be faithful, whether they go on to seminary or not. I've got a guy who is a gifted teacher in our church. He got his gift him completely. He'd never gone to any training, and yet in 9 years, by God's grace, I've been able to train him up into one of the most influential teachers in that community of Malaw. And he teaches grace.
The problem is that the networking is piecemeal.
Let me make an observation here. This is really great. There's a bunch of us getting together tomorrow night. We're going to be taking a lot of these ideas. And one of the purposes of that meeting is to see if we can formulate a strategy. And then maybe come back to the group as a whole. Probably won't be this time. But I don't know how. We'll have to talk about how to do it because there's too much on the schedule. At this point, we won't have time to think it through. But this is the kind of interaction we need. We do need a strategy. I mean, this is great because it's just kind of not happening. I like to throw out one suggestion, really, coming back to the missionary thing. I just heard about this a week ago. It's 5 churches in Austin, and they have an agreement together. Each church can bring up 1 missionary a year, and the 5 support him full time. And it just goes around in a circle. So every year there's another guy going into the mission field. I'm just wondering if we couldn't somehow, as a Grace Evangelical Society, good grief, there's what, 500 people in that room, get X number of people committed to some $10, I don't know, whatever, and we could actually have funds available for grace-oriented missionaries so that when they need to get out and get their support raised, it doesn't take them 2 years or 3, but they can get out there and get on the field in 6 months.
Very good. Very good. We're out of time. Can you keep it under a minute?
Yes, I can.
Good.
It seems like you want to be a supply truce to guys that are leading the front rows. The only thing is you haven't identified who they are. Why don't you spend time with this man to find out what the best way to find out who the missionaries are? And that's or how to find that, what it would cost to about him, mm-hmm. and duplicate that and put the list together. You get a list, ask them what they need. Mm-hmm. And then put it out on the web for all of these bureau affiliates out here, but to match each other.
See, that's a very good suggestion. These are all good suggestions, and the strength is that we're all here with Grace Evangelical Society. The truth is that neither Jody nor I really represent Grace Evangelical Society, so you keep referring to us as that, and we're not. So we have a network, but we do not have a centralized thing that can do these kind of things, and that's one of the things that we're talking about and wondering about. I don't know how to summarize what we've said here, but we do appreciate your contribution. But I think what we've heard is that there's a need at many different levels for grace. There's a need for some way of networking it, systematizing it, organizing it. We all have the same heart. We don't have a good way maybe to support the same missionaries right now.